From the Lend to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 26th day of April, 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. We'll hear from FBFM's Brad Zwilling about debt-to-asset ratios historically and the projections for next year and what that means for farmers. And we'll also talk with Eric Snodgrass of Nutrien Ag Solutions. I'll remind you that we're in the beginning of our spring fund drive. We'll give.org or 217-244-9455 to make your pledge of support. And if you can stay with us for the whole of the hour, you'll hear our Commodity Week program with Logan Kimmel and John Zanker, all on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn for the day settled at $4.40. That was a penny lower. July down two at $4.50. And December at $4.73.5. 2.75 lower. The May soybeans, $11.59.5. Settled 3.25 lower. July down 2.5 at $11.77.25. And November beans, 0.75 cents lower at $11.74.75. Soft red winter wheat in the July at $6.22.25. Up a penny and 0.75. And the hard red at $6.46.25, 14.25 cents higher. Live cattle futures were up 77.5 cents, and hogs were down 252.5. Mike Zuzulo at GlobalCommerce.com out of Atchison, Kansas, now joins us to discuss what's happened in the marketplace. And while we're talking, you can actually dial in at 217-244-9455 to make that pledge of financial support. First day of our spring fund drive. Thank you for doing that. Or you can maybe more easily go to willgive.org or just go to willag.org and hit the donate button at the top of the page. Mike, thank you for being part of our program for such a very long time. I know the listeners, when they talk about analysts, you are mentioned often, very often, as one of the analysts they love to listen to. It's because you take that macro look at the marketplace, and it makes a difference for them, I know. And I love to talk to you on Fridays about all of the week's trade, so I do appreciate that.
Well, and I appreciate the Will Radio. I appreciate you. I mean, I call you a friend and a colleague. I would not be in business today if it weren't for Will Radio. I know that, and I really appreciate all the listeners out there, and I especially appreciate those of you who've joined up and hooked up with a subscription, and please keep supporting Will Radio. It's getting more and more difficult to have voices out there that have independent broadcasting, much like independent commodity research that I try and continue to do throughout this time period.
Speaking of that independent commodity research, what have you been thinking about this week?
You know, we're really trying to stay with the program of what we've been speaking about for months now, Todd, about a wheat-led rally for two big reasons, for the funds to get over the disinflation fear and the lack of inflation, the lack of Fed, the lack of China-related investment, and then also the weather and the weather not impacting the markets. Even though we've had several geopolitical and weather occurrences, they haven't been able to impact this market to the upside. And it's mainly because of the idea of the oversupply coming in 24-25 marketing year versus 23-24. I mean, you and I have talked about the world wheat stocks to use ratios being at 10-year lows for probably 3 or 4 months straight, but it just now has started to click, and it just now is starting to happen. And I think both the disinflation and the oversupply fears are going away and being reevaluated by the markets at the same time. So it's a very important time period to stay with these markets, because by the end of the month, it could be a very big change in price action that gives us one of few opportunities to get marketing done. Or it could be the beginning of another leg higher, depending on those macro forces and especially that U.S. dollar trade.
In particular, I suppose you're thinking of corn and soybean marketing, maybe wheat as well. What are the things that would portend the different trajectories in the marketplace? What has to happen for each of those? One that would be higher just hire or one that is a marketing opportunity.
Yeah, and you're right about the row crops and wheat also being included in it, but beans always the first to get marketed at this point with the supply-demand fundamentals. But to answer your question, a very brief amount of time, the commitment of traders report is extremely important, Todd, at this point, because one of the biggest reasons why we were hoping we could get an April rally in a counter-seasonal time period in corn and beans was led by the wheat and led by the funds being too short and them getting nervous about these massive funds, short positions. This takes us to the U.S. dollar. If we're like 2009 in a model year, like we've been trading in hard red wheat, the dollar peaked in April, May of 2009 and really went lower all the way the rest of the calendar year. So that's a very important piece of this puzzle, but it's important to see the Russian crop getting tighter, the European crop getting tighter, the French crop getting tighter as well, and Ukraine corn prices at a four-month high. The last thing I'll say is South American production means a lot when it comes to the corn in terms of joining up with the wheat more and more. I think it's a tighter number in Brazil and Argentina. If it's 10 million tons or more in less production, that could tighten those world stocks to use ratios in corn to 5-6 year lows. And all of a sudden, we're talking about wheat and corn being very, very tight when 2 months ago we were talking about them being very, very big.
So you're talking about a still a good crop in Brazil, I take it. But something because the weather is turning more quickly to dry conditions that might impact it over time and lower that crop. So 10 million metric tons is actually a pretty good size drop, but that's what you're pointing towards is the drier weather that's already starting to take place and the move quicker to the dry weather than usual.
That and the fact that if we hit the rewind button and talk about a tighter Brazil crop 2 months ago, the trade would automatically say, yeah, but Argentina is going to be a whopper. Well, the leaf hopper sounds like it's done its job there with spreading that spiroplasma around. And now all of a sudden you've got Brazil and Argentina on the hook for lower stocks, along with the fact that French corn planting is only at 26%. At this point, as of Monday, and they were over 50% on a five-year average basis. So you've got a global issue also in the corn that's similar to the wheat that's starting to brew now.
There's a lot of information there for farmers to try to digest, and then they have to work in to that their decisions that are being made still about acreage in the United States. What are you hearing from farmers across the whole of the Corn Belt?
This week was the first week I had heard and gotten some fear in the voices of some of the producers east of the Mississippi River about corn planting delays and those starting to talk about being talked about more. I'm not there yet. I think it's got to be May 15 before we really talk about that. But I do also realize USDA's got a very high 181 national yield on a very small acreage base. So I'm sensitive to that, Todd, but I think the biggest point to be made at this point in time anyway is that wheat-led market and where we sit at the end of this month. And if it's still weather-driven, it's still a market to be hedged. If it's demand-driven, then maybe we can take it up another leg, and that demand is really relying upon that currency market.
Where are the farmers that are concerned about the planting season located?
Yeah, I would say, and this is rough draft and 30,000 feet, but I'd say northern thirds of Illinois, Indiana, Ohio really catch a lot of the nervousness that Nebraska and Nebraska, Kansas farmers really more worried about the dry weather and that now being taken care of in some parts over this past week. But yeah, this was more east of the Mississippi, and I think Missouri might become a very big focal point for the wheat. If we get 8, 9, 10 inches of rain in Missouri the next 10 days, like some of these models are suggesting, that's a big soft red wheat, corn, and bean state as well.
All right. Anything else before I let you go for the day?
The one thing we haven't talked about, and I leave it at the very end, is when you're gaming out or planning your profitability, think about the HPAI, think about the influenza A, think about the downside potential if we lose a lot of feed quickly in case this thing doesn't go away. And that's something we're talking a lot about out here in cattle country. So please keep that in mind as we talk about the upside potential in these markets.
Clearly continuing to be a developing situation. Thank you for all you do. Thank you for being with us here at Illinois Public Media. for such a very long time. We appreciate it.
Right back at you, Todd. Thank you, sir.
Mike Zuzlow is with GlobalCommResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas, joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. He is one of more than 17 analysts you hear regularly on our programming during the week at Illinois Public Media, and it's our spring fun drive. And if those 17, 18, 20, or 25 voices, by the time we include all the USDA folks, the FarmDoc folks, those from FBFM like Brad Zwilling, who you'll hear in just a moment, the weather people like Eric Snodgrass, who also will air today on the program, make a difference to you. We hope you can help us out as well. We're in the midst of our spring fund drive, and we'd like the folks that listen to agriculture to pledge their financial support to the radio station. You can do that at willag.org and hit the donate button at the top of the page, or go to willgive.org and then fill out the programming content there, or just call 217-244-9455. It's quick, it's simple, and easy in any case, only about a minute or two if you do it online or by phone. Again, 217-244-9455. I kind of like the $120 level. $240 is great. $640 is fantastic. Up more, less, whatever you give is wonderful. And I thank you so very much. Now, let's turn our attention to Brad Zwilling. I spoke with him earlier today on campus here in Urbana-Champaign at the U of I. He's a member of the FBFM team, the Farm Business Farm Management team that feeds into the FarmDoc system. That's a record-keeping program function for farmers across the state of Illinois, and had taken a look in one of the FarmDoc Daily articles posted earlier in the week at debt-to-asset ratios. I asked him why.
We wanted to really look at measures that were going to be affecting farmers as we look forward with these lower income years. And we looked at debt-to-asset ratio because we have a good panel from 2003 all the way through 2022 and outlooks for 23 and then what 24 could be. So this is a great time to do this. This is a solvency measure. It kind of takes debt divided by assets. The other reason we looked at this is because debt has been going up as well as assets. So by looking at a debt-to-asset ratio, you can see how they've been changing over time in relation to each other.
This is a figure that banks use when they make loans to producers, and for that matter, when they simply make loans.
Right. And I mean, the way we look at it, it's how much of your assets that your creditor owns. And that's what that ratio would mean. Debt to assets is be how much your creditor owns compared to what your would be of your assets.
And what did you find?
So we found that it was interesting. From 2003 up through 2013, that ratio was decreasing over time because our assets were growing, we were getting better prices, and our liabilities weren't increasing as fast. That period from 2013 down to 2019, we saw that they were just kind of leveling out or creeping up a little bit, that debt-to-asset ratio. But then since then, we saw that it's we had really high grain prices and we had some other government payments things. So we had a lot of cash available. We increased our current assets. So debt-to-asset ratio was decreasing even more. Also, we know that our assets were increasing at a very high clip because of COVID. Machinery values were increasing, and so is our land value. So our debt-to-asset ratio has really been coming down up through 2022.
In general, these debt-to-asset ratios from 2003 to now have been good to very good?
Yeah, good to very good. We've gone to a point where, you know, we like to see under 0.2%, 20%, and they've been well on. I mean, we were at 17% for 2022, so that was really good. 2023, we're getting through those final, those numbers there. That's still going to be about the same. And we look at 2024, the projection for those is they're going to probably creep up a little bit, but not really a lot yet because that debt to assets, those assets are still climbing in value.
And this was across all farm sizes. And can you define those a bit too?
Yeah, all across all farm sizes throughout the state. And then we also divided those up by size based off of gross receipts. So, and I don't remember those off the top of my head, but we had three different groups. And we saw that the larger the farms were in gross receipts, the smaller that debt to asset ratio was. So it was very interesting to look at.
I do remember them. 350,000 and down was small. 350,000 to $999,999 was medium. And then the large were above $1 million in gross sales. Anything out of this look back historically or forward that we need to know?
Yeah, I think moving forward, we're going to need to watch this because we also know that with the operating notes we're going to start utilizing, we didn't utilize much in 2023. We're probably going to use that for maybe the whole year this year. So we're going to have more debt that's going to bring that top number down a little bit. So we could have some higher debt to asset ratios. The other thing to think about that we didn't talk about was to look at age. And typically our farmers that are beginning have a much higher debt to asset ratio and they would be in the smaller group. So that's why we see some of that, why the debt to asset ratio was increase or decreasing and getting better as those farms got larger. Because as those people get older, that debt to asset ratio, they're more the all the assets, not just in those current portion that a lot of those young farmers are in.
Brad Zwilling is with Illinois FBFM. That's the Farm Business, Farm Management, Record Keeping Service. You can see the article that he helped pen on the Farm Doc Daily website today. Look for debt to asset ratios at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Have you gone to willgive.org or called 217-244-9455 and made a pledge in support of the ag programming yet? I hope so. If not, do it right now. Don't wait. It's part of the programming that you listen to here from Illinois Public Media. Those 17 or 18 or 20 or 25 voices that you might hear on any given week talking about agriculture, if that makes a difference to you, including the weather, then give us a call now at willgive.org, 217-244-9455, and make that pledge of support. Speaking of weather, Eric Snodgrass from Nutrient Ag Solutions and Agrible is here. Hi, Eric. Thank you for being with us. Other than wet and rainy, what do you see in the Midwest for the next week?
Yeah, well, it's a lot of rainfall, and it's really kind of anchored in the Western Corn Belt and partly in the winter wheat belt. But it's important to note that there are big sections of Kansas that are missing out on this. So the big story today and Friday going into Saturday and Sunday will be severe weather. We have a three-day event that's taking place mostly to our west, although we will get storms to roll through this area. But the reality of it is that there's a widespread region that stretches from eastern Texas all the way through Illinois back into the western Corn Belt that's going to have the better chance of getting more than an inch of rain, some places 3 to 4 inches of rain. I'm talking about Missouri, eastern Kansas, Arkansas, and possibly even wetter conditions into Iowa. Now, the reality of it is it's going to slow us down in terms of any sort of early spring progress. But the moisture getting into the soil is going to be huge because that's an area that is still under some pretty significant drought. So as I see it, this next couple of days of storm systems rolling through, and then the way the pattern kind of remains active to finish out the month of April suggests that we're going wet, which is going to make us wait for open time periods to kind of get planting going once we get into May.
You'd better tell me about May and what the outlook might be in that case.
Yeah, so May is a bit of a tough one. Right now, some of the longer range models are calling for near normal to drier than normal conditions for us. And to be honest, that would match up pretty well with historical evidence of years when there was an El Nino in winter that fell apart in spring, which is exactly what we've got right now. So we should expect May to give us a good look. I will say this, there's a couple of days that are sticking out in my head right now. That would be May 7th, 8th, maybe 9th as well. And the reason why I'm concerned about it is some of the models are trying to drop some colder air over the Great Lakes. I don't see a frost right now in that forecast, but we could get some chilly nights coming up during that time frame. So right about the time we finish with the wet weather, we'll get some mild conditions in to follow, but there could be another breakaway 7th, 8th, and 9th for some colder conditions. Rest of May looks pretty decent. I don't see any major red flags in May for the Midwest getting a crop established. It's just going to feel a little late given how warm winter was.
Do you still think the heat is on in June, July, and August?
No, this is the good question. So I've made a case for you that I think that there is going to be the risk of a hotter summer this summer. And I also said I think it's going to be wet. I think hot and stormy is what we've got. Now, I'm basing that off of historical information, plus I'm basing it off some of the models. But the new data from the Climate Prediction Center combined with some of those forecast models suggest that if there's drought, it builds up out of the west. And I mean, just yesterday, another massive dust storm with wildfires in Mexico, New Mexico, and Texas. So we're just curious if we're going to continue to build drought up through the plains that could migrate east by midsummer. Now, If we think about one other factor, the factor that's been let out or left out of all of this, for the last 30 years, it has been more common in summer for there to be extreme heat to the west. And even though none of the analogs and none of the models are showing that there could be a major western U.S. ridging event, which in that case, we would have a tremendous amount of rain here for the central United States. But in that case that that occurs, I'd be very, very concerned about the upcoming wildfire season in the west, which is one of those years where we tend to get really smoky skies over us. So Todd, we've been talking at length about the risk in our area, but we need to consider what happens if we get that old common pattern of massive ridging in the western United States into summer, and what that could mean for our summer thunderstorms, and what it could also mean for the risk of wildfires west. Long story short, in that scenario, we're still hotter and stormier.
We'll have you stay up to date for us on that point. Turn your attention to South America now.
Yeah, so we normally expect the monsoon to start really slowing down at the end of April, and then first couple of weeks of May make its exit. Well, it started slowing down about, I don't know, a week ago. And the forecast right now coming through parts of Mato Grosso do Sul, Paraná, you know, the main Safrinha corn acres is actually a big zero on precipitation for the next 10 days. There could be some light scattered precipitation, which is just common down there, but no overwhelming signal for wet. You know, where it's wet is in southern Brazil. It's wet into Argentina, parts of Paraguay and Uruguay, which is disruptive as well. Now, the drier conditions coming in there now with some late, you know, heat. This would be, you know, autumn heat for them. But the question is it going to start to have an impact on Safrinha crops? Talking with a few growers down there right now, they're like, not yet. But you could tell just in their voices that the chances are that this could start to become a problem if it lasts as dry as it is throughout the month of May. Because once we get past May, it is dry season where there's no measurable precipitation down there. So there's a story brewing on Safrinha corn.
Does that dry season come in the lower latitudes as well? In Argentina, I guess, is my question.
So in the near term, Argentina is going to be seeing quite a bit of precipitation, a lot of autumn thunderstorm activity. And I think through the month of May, I'm not overly concerned about early dryness moving into Argentina. But if we transition back toward La Nina, we flip the pattern in South America, which would mean their next growing season, we would expect Brazil to have the precipitation and the drought risk coming back into Argentina. That tends to be the way the transition away from El Nino toward La Nina does. So we'd flip the script. You know, this year we were wet in Argentina. We had some drought early in Brazil. We would expect to see that flip north-south as we get into the end of 2024 and the beginning of the 2025 season for them.
Hey, thank you much. That, of course, is Eric Snodgrass. He's from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. You can hear him each and every Friday right here on Illinois Public Media's Closing Market Report. Eric is one of six different meteorologists that you will hear most weeks here on the program. And if that makes a difference to you, I'm hopeful that you'll make a difference to us at WILL, Illinois Public Media. We are public radio for the farming world, and that means we like you to participate in our financial future. We put everything in the bank that we use in the coming fiscal year, so we'll need to have that in June, but we'd like to have you participate right now in our spring fund drive. You can do that at willgive.org or at 217-244-9455, and thank you. The Closing Market Report theme music is written, performed, and produced by Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.